I don't see why people should be forced to, you know, trade in perfectly good non-peeling license plates and pay $25.
We're taking the time to file a lawsuit so that we can prevail in court and ultimately have a judge tell EPA to get back to work.
I wish him all the well in his future endeavors. Look, I don't think the book is closed on Sean Morris.
Hi there, it's WAMC News Director Ian Pickus. On this episode of the WAMC News Podcast, is New York State's plan to replace license plates really just a new tax? The state sues the EPA over GE's Hudson River cleanup, and the city of Cohoes has a caretaker mayor after Sean Morse pleads guilty in federal court. A plan by New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's administration to require motorists to pay a $25 fee to replace aging license plates is getting some resistance. The Democratic governor says it's needed to comply with new cashless scanners being set up on toll roads and bridges all over the state. Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt reports.
The transition to the new license plates includes a contest to allow New Yorkers to choose among five different designs for new plates to be issued beginning next year. But the public does not have a say on whether they can keep their old plates or avoid paying a $25 fee for new ones beginning next April. There's a $20 additional charge to keep the same plate numbers. 3.5 million vehicles have plates older than 10 years, according to the State Department of Motor Vehicles. The fees would bring the state at least an additional $75 million. The head of the state's Republican Party, Nick Langworthy, questions the need to require New Yorkers to buy new license plates if their current plates are still readable and in good condition.
I don't see why people should be forced to, you know, trade in perfectly good non-peeling license plates and pay $25. It's another stealth tax. It's another cash grab. It's standard operating procedure here in Albany.
Governor Andrew Cuomo, speaking at the state fair in Syracuse on Wednesday, says the new plates are necessary to be compatible with the new cashless tolling now installed on bridges in New York City and to be installed across the New York State Thruway within the next 2 years.
The license plates are not designed for our license plate readers. The license plate readers, electronic tolling, needs a light colored background and a darker color number letter for the license plate reader to work.
According to the state DMV, the National Industry Group, the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, recommends that license plates be replaced at least every 10 years and that states should have an ongoing replacement program. Under a state law passed in 2009, the DMV is permitted to charge a $25 fee for the new plates. That law stems from a proposal by former Governor David Paterson. He planned to replace all of the license plates in the state and charge the fee, but he backed down after negative publicity. Cuomo says it's only fair for the motorist to pay the fee.
It's your license plate. You should pay the cost of the license plate. If you don't pay, then we'd have to pay out of tax dollars. And then you're charging New Yorkers who have nothing to do with anything, and they're buying your license plate.
E.J. McMahon with the fiscal watchdog group, the Empire Center, says it makes sense for the state to replace plates that are peeling and hard to read in an era where toll collections are increasingly dependent on electronic scanners.
We're in an era now where the state increasingly is literally banking on the legibility of license plates to enforce tolling.
But he says it already costs over $100 to register a car when other add-on fees are included. He says perhaps the governor could have handled it differently and waived the new fees. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
New York State is suing the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency over General Electric's PCB cleanup in the Hudson River. The state threatened the action earlier this year and made it official this week. WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn has more.
In April, EPA issued a certification of completion of remedial action to General Electric for its cleanup of PCBs along a 40-mile stretch of the Upper Hudson River. At that time, state officials said they would sue over the EPA's decision that deems GE's cleanup job complete and relieves GE from liability for cleanup. And on Wednesday, they did. State Department of Environmental Conservation Commissioner Basil Sagos.
Well, listen, I mean, we're taking the time to file a lawsuit so that we can prevail in court and ultimately have a judge tell EPA to get back to work. And there's so much work that needs to be done on the Hudson River, the fact that EPA effectively walked away from its obligations and said, well, maybe in 5 or 6 or 7 decades, the cleanup will have been successful. And that is just unacceptable for every single river community, every person that cares about the Hudson, everyone that wants to fish in the river but can't. More work needs to be done.
A spokeswoman says the EPA does not comment on pending litigation. In June, EPA Regional Administrator Pete Lopez told WAMC the federal agency will continue to monitor the PCB levels in the river and that EPA's position was appropriate.
That certification, again, is not to be confused with certification of completion of the work, which we may not see in our lifetimes. It may be the remedy scenario horizon is 50 years. Unless and until we reach that point, GE is not off the hook.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and State Attorney General Letitia James, in announcing the lawsuit, said that when EPA issued the certificate of completion, the agency's five-year review found that the cleanup was not adequately protective of human health and the environment. The EPA concluded that it did not have sufficient information to even determine if or when the cleanup would meet this standard. Again, Sagos.
That's exactly what we're suing upon today. That EPA exceeded its authority to give GE effectively a pass for its work.
The state's lawsuit charges that the EPA's issuance of the certificate of completion to GE is beyond the agency's legal authority and should be vacated. A number of environmental groups applauded Cuomo and James for filing the suit, including Poughkeepsie Bay Scenic Hudson, where Ned Sullivan is president.
This is a river that has been compromised for five decades. EPA itself admits it's going to be at least five decades more. So it's absolutely crucial that New York State take this action today so that they can bring all pressure to bear to force GE to conduct the additional cleanup that's needed.
GE spokesman Mark Behan in a statement says, quote, EPA conducted a comprehensive review of the Hudson River dredging project and concluded that dredging successfully reduced PCB levels, no additional dredging is warranted, and GE met all of its obligations. New York State's data showed that 99% of locations sampled in the Upper Hudson met the cleanup standard that EPA and New York set. Environmental conditions in the Hudson will continue to improve, and GE will continue to cooperate with both EPA and New York State, end quote. Sago says PCB-laden fish are an indication that the cleanup is not complete or successful.
Look, the fish have not recovered to the extent to which the record of decision required. We have we'd expected a faster recovery in fish. That's what GE had told us would happen.
General Electric removed 2.65 million cubic yards of contaminated sediment through 2015. Reporting from WAMC's Hudson Valley Bureau on the campus of Vassar College, I'm Hudson Valley Bureau Chief Allison Dunn.
Well, hours after Cohoes Mayor Sean Morse pleaded guilty to wire fraud in federal court, the Cohoes Common Council named an interim city leader this week. WAMC's Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard reports.
The Cohoes Common Council voted Tuesday to mark August 20th, the last paid day for Mayor Sean Morse, who has loomed large in Albany County politics for years. Earlier in the day, the first-term Democrat pleaded guilty to one felony count for the misuse of campaign funds in federal court in Binghamton. On Tuesday night, Common Council President Chris Briggs was sworn in as mayor for the remainder of Morse's term, which expires at the end of the year.
According to the best of my ability.
The U.S. Attorney's Office and FBI say Morse obtained $12,250 in political contributions from at least 10 people to pay for personal expenses. In March, Morse's campaign treasurer, Ralph Signoracci, pleaded guilty to conspiracy to commit wire fraud. Authorities say Signoracci failed to disclose or falsely reported campaign expenditures. The campaign finance case came after the embattled Morse was already facing calls to resign from top Democrats, including the governor, over past domestic violence allegations. The mayor was defiant and denied the allegations. Briggs said he hoped the city can turn a page and wished no ill will toward Morse. He said a lot of good things that happened in the city over the last 3.5 years would not have happened without the bulldog, Sean Morse.
It's a very, very unfortunate situation, but these are the cards we're dealt and we're going to deal with it.
Briggs believes state law backs up the Common Council's actions and said because Morse admitted guilt to a felony that his position is vacated.
I mean, he has the option of going to the court and seeing if somehow they believe that it's different than what our counsel told us, what other lawyers have reiterated without stepping in with an opinion. So, you know, I think we're on extremely firm ground.
Briggs said he spoke to Morse earlier in the day. He reportedly told Briggs that he believes he could remain in office until sentencing, December 10th.
He felt that he was dealing with federal law, and I told him that is not my opinion.
There was no action Tuesday to determine who would take Briggs' seat on the Common Council. Bill Keeler, who won the decisive four-way Democratic primary, including Morse, in June, said he hoped the city would send a strong message to Morse that his time has run out. Keeler is widely expected to take office as mayor in January.
I hope Corporation Council drafts a letter telling him that he's no longer mayor, cites the law, so that there's no confusion. It would be liability on the city if this Sean Morse thinks he's still a mayor and comes into the office and orders people around, and, you know, who knows what could happen.
During Tuesday's special meeting, Councilor Randy Kanifka wished Morse the best, though acknowledged their past political differences, saying nobody went harder with Sean than he did.
Again, I think at the end of the day, he had the best interests of the city at heart. And I wish him all the well in his future endeavors. Look, I don't think the book is closed on Sean Morse. So he's, you know, he's not out.
Requests for comment to Morse and his lawyer following Tuesday's guilty plea were not returned. For more, visit WAMC.org. Reporting from Cohoes for WAMC News, I'm Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief Lucas Willard.
Joining us to talk about the situation in his home city and some state issues is New York State Assemblyman John McDonald, a Democrat from the 108th District who served as mayor of Cohoes for 13 years. Assemblyman, what's been your reaction to the latest in the city?
Well, it's an unfortunate chapter that the city's gone through. And, you know, the guilty plea the other day that Sean admitted in federal court set off this recent change of events. And, you know, let's be clear. Sean has done some great work during his tenure as mayor, just like most mayors do. They always have certain things to point to. But unfortunately, his personal transgressions caught up to him. And so we're now on to another chapter. Chris Briggs, who I've known for 25, 30 years, a very capable individual, by design of the charter, moves into the role of acting mayor. He'll do a great job throughout the course of the year. I don't think he'll just be a placeholder. I think he'll be a very active mayor. And at the same token, he's got a very good working relationship with the soon-to-be mayor on January 1st, Bill Keeler, who I've known since grade school. They both have the same temperament. They are very thoughtful individuals. And I think this, in a way, sets up to be a beautiful transition for Bill Keeler, which will help the city of Cohoes continue to move forward.
You had that job for a long time. What makes someone be a good mayor of Cohoes? What does the job entail, and what do they have to do?
Well, and, you know, this is not to demean the role, because I still consider that job as probably the most important job I've ever had in my lifetime. But the reality is this: yes, the mayor is the leader of the city. The mayor does set direction. But what is often lost in the process is that the mayor can't do it by themselves. The mayor needs a good team around he or she to get the job done. And that's really what makes the city tick. Not only the people working, the public servants, but also the community at large and their participation. And I think that those are, I know the way Bill is and I know the way Chris is, they will continue to carry on that spirit. But it's really about having the right people in the right spot and also to listen, to take in ideas, to build relationships. During my 13 years as mayor, I made it a point not only to work with our constituents and also the department heads, but mostly to work with our neighboring mayors and supervisors and our state and federal officials as well. It's about relationships and about being in that channel to identify what's going on and to see if it's applicable to your community. And I think, you know, I look back at, you know, everyone looks back at their accomplishments. I look back at during my time as mayor, I saw that GlobalFoundries was going to be a reality. We saw that SUNY Nanotech was continuing to grow. We saw that RPI was continuing to grow. And we really re-engineered our city from being an old industrial city to being a up-and-coming residential community, and it's been evidenced by not only the first population increase at the last census in 2010, but we continue to see growth in our community, and it's a positive on every different avenue. And you're seeing that spill down into the downtown business district. As more and more people live here, more and more people require services, whether it's something as simple as eating or stopping at the pharmacy. And we're seeing that growth in the downtown, and it's a good thing.
We should just note that we're talking to you at your pharmacy right now.
Yeah, exactly. No secret here. Everyone knows I have outside income and another responsibility.
Okay, well, since you've taken us there, are you planning to maybe leave state government with this upcoming ban on outside income moving in?
I have no plans on leaving office. I mean, the only day I'll leave office is if the public decides I should leave office. And that's the way it should be. The ban has, from court order perspective, pretty much been diminished. Basically, next year was scheduled to be the second increase in the pay that will not go up because the outside income ban was declared by the judge as being illegal and not part of what was originally agreed to. There was an agreement 2 years ago to have a compensation committee put together to identify if and should the compensation be increased. And that was decided, but they also decided to throw in that in year two, there would also be an increase in the salary with the outside income ban. And that was not part of the agreement. The outside income ban is something that should be thoroughly discussed. It should be publicly vetted. But anybody who believes that the outside income has been the cause for the last 30 individuals over the last 20 years to leave office under disgrace has been totally incorrectly informed. Arguably, two individuals, one being Sheldon Silver, abused the privilege of outside income. And that's it. The rest was good old-fashioned graft.
But what about the argument that if you don't have an outside income at all, there can't be any question there, that even the potential for some sort of dual dealing exists, even though by and large, probably many of the lawmakers aren't involved in any such thing. But just the question could be there in voters' minds because they don't know.
Yeah. Well, you know, this is why there's a couple different aspects to this, and you have to look at this in a balanced conversation. Now, more than ever before, because of Sheldon Silver and because of Dean Scalise, the disclosure requirements on state legislators is at the highest level possible. My disclosure statement, which is posted on my state website and on my campaign website, which is not required, but I do that because it's actually legislation I carry, is there to fully inform the voters of who I am and what I do, whether it's in the legislature or outside the legislature. And that leads to the other aspect. I am one of the few, if only, practicing healthcare professionals out of 213 members. Now, that doesn't give me a gold star by any stretch of the imagination, but it does give an example of an individual who brings real-time experience on what's going on in the healthcare system. And when you look at the fact that we spend over $50 billion a year on health and Medicaid, it's not a bad idea to have somebody who can stand there and validate, yes, this is what's happening in the field, and no, that's not what's happening in the field. So it gets back to, do you want to have a single body of individuals who are solely dependent on being reelected to make a living, or do you want individuals who bring experience and are able to stand up, take votes, when they're not going to be popular? You know, I think the general public has no idea what actually goes on at the legislature. I've been there now 7 years. I've been around there for 20 years through my years as mayor of the city of Cohoes. There are a lot of special interests that spend a lot of time doing their job and getting people to sing their song sheet. But at the end of the day, and you got to be careful because some people get insulated and they just focus on what the special interests want versus what the public wants. I like to think as a citizen legislator, I bring a balanced approach. There are many others that do that. And it's not for any other reason that that is how our constitutional framers developed government. If it was to be changed, then we should go through a very public discussion, let the people make a decision on that. And quite honestly, I argue that being one now who's been elected to public office not once but eight times, the public has made their decision in regards to John McDonald.
Let me just play devil's advocate on that issue before we get to something else. So let's say you're taking a vote that pertains to pharmaceuticals or something like that. There could be a question that you're voting as someone who owns a pharmacy. As opposed to...
That's a valid question. And quite honestly, if that comes up that it has a direct impact on me, I would actually do a rare thing that you see up there. It's that NV, that orange one, no vote. I would abstain.
Has that happened?
It has not happened by any stretch of the imagination. But I will tell you this, what has happened, when I came to the legislature and I sat through my first ethics training, it became very suddenly apparent to me that I had a potential conflict of interest through no fault of my own. I had inherited through a pharmacy closing about $500,000 a year in prescription drug business to service the state agency's Department of Disabled Persons group homes. And because of the fact that that agency, which is a whole other discussion, at that time was not doing RFPs for services, and because I did more than $25 a year in business, as soon as I sat in training, I went to the training officer after. I went to our counselor and said, I have a conflict of interest. I need to make sure that these patients, I drop this business. But I do that in a way. I went there, got the legal opinion from counsel. I went to the SED to make sure I wasn't violating my oath as a pharmacist. The bottom line is that people do the right thing. The problem is we only hear about when people do the wrong thing, not the right thing. And, you know, I, along with many others, are very conscientious about the fact that we're public officers. We're elected to represent the people, not ourselves. And we need to be very mindful. But at the same token, I don't think you can debate the fact that here we are in the height of the opioid crisis, and it's not a bad idea to have somebody at the table discussing what's going on in the field so we know what the right direction is to go.
I want to ask you about the license plates. Now, so Governor Cuomo announced a contest to pick a new design. And in that announcement, several paragraphs down, came word that if your license plates are more than 10 years old, you will have to buy new ones. And if you want to keep the same number, there's an additional charge. Is this a good idea?
So I got to tell you, this has been like the curveball of the week. Usually there's one. This is the curveball of the week. This came out of nowhere. It's not something the legislature approved. It's something the Department of Motor Vehicles has pushed forward. Yes, the governor did the announcement. I think the contest is kind of fun, actually, because personally, as an upstater, I like the one that shows Niagara Falls and the New York City skyline. It shows one New York. That's just my push for my favorite plate. That being said, there is a lot of confusion out there about what is actually being accomplished. The argument I've heard is that the old blue and white plates, which some of them, as you know, if you remember back 15 years ago when they were produced, they started to peel, are not readable on the plate scanners. We do want to move to a totally cashless toll system. That's going to actually prevent future toll increases or the amount of future toll increases. It's also going to make the motorist trip that much more quicker. So I think no one could disagree with that. The issue is, if I like my plate, why am I paying an extra fee? And that's the item that we're having great trouble with. And John Q. Public is having great trouble with it because we know that the state's finances are always a challenge. You know, from the outsider's perspective or the listener's perspective, this looks like a money grab. We're trying to really identify factually what was the history before, why is this change being done, and you know, myself, and I know my colleagues in the Capital Region, and I know many other legislators on both sides of the aisle are questioning the agency on exactly what are they doing. And I understand why they're doing it. I don't dispute why they're doing it. And quite honestly, I don't think it's logical for the state to have three different plates. I just don't think it makes sense. You know, you have the white and blue, you have the gold and blue, which, you know, I get new plates every 2 years because our numbers change. And by the way, people don't know this, the legislators pay for those every single time. And I'm not complaining, just making a point of fact. Technically, as the rest of society moves towards a cashless system, a scanning system, it makes sense to make sure we have state-of-the-art plates. I'm still wondering out loud, well, if there's white and blue plates and you're saying we're not catching them, then how come people are saying they're getting caught in other states? Or are you telling me that we left a lot of money on the table over all these years? And if we're leaving money on the table, then why are we putting an additional fee on it? So this is, it's a fact-finding. It's definitely an exercise in frustration. And it seems like it's more than the curveball of the week.
New York State Assemblyman John McDonald of the 108th District. He's a Democrat. Thank you so much for your time talking about some city and state issues.
Thanks, Ian. Have a great day.
And that does it for this episode of the WAMC News Podcast. Remember to stay subscribed for the latest from the Northeast. Thank you for listening. Till next time, I'm Ian Pickus.